The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, welcome in Sunday night, June 7th, 2015. Great weekend of sports. If you are into it, like the two guys here tonight, I'm Derek Wozniak. Across from me, in a little while, will be John Sweeney. And this weekend, I'll tell you what, folks, the Mets and the Yankees, end of business day today, both in first place. How about that? Yankees sitting atop that AL East at 32-25, a six-game winning streak. Captain Crunch on the mound today, got a win before he got kicked out, sent home, early shower, early dinner, which I'm sure he enjoyed. And the Mets won! Did a good job in Arizona. Been struggling a little bit of late with Washington. But at 31-27, they're a half game up on the Nationals. So how about that? First things first. In tennis, my main lady, Serena Williams, takes home the French Open. Her 20th title. She's only two behind Steffi Graf for major wins in the Open era. She's won the first two tournaments this year, the Australian and the French Open. If she can win the next two, she'll have the slam in 1 year for the first time since 1988, which was done by Steffi Graf.
Steffi.
My other all-time favorite.
Serena Williams is the best.
So for a woman who has battled through numerous problems regarding her feet, and you need your feet in tennis, Serena Williams, in terms of intensity and preparation and performance, I put her right up there with Walter Payton and marvelous Marvin Hagler, and even my guy, Mark Messier. That intense performance in the field of action and in preparation away from it. She is, quite honestly, arguably the best female athlete of all time. You could argue. I'm sure there's others. Yeah. And she's certainly one of the best athletes of all time. And then you had my partner John Sweeney's favorite pastime, horse racing.
The best.
Where the Triple Crown was achieved for the first time since
37 years.
1978.
American Farah. 37 years, folks. Unbelievable.
And John's cousin predicted it right. So I want to give Chris credit out there. From Staten Island, he called us. Was he from Staten Island? Where's Chris live?
North Carolina right now.
North Carolina. So he travels the U.S.
And also...
But he was right.
And we had a guest on.
And
said 70%, Michael.
John
Canelli.
And Michael Canelli were wrong when put under the hot heat of the lamp, interrogation style, they both said that...
Frosted.
That he was going to lose.
I did.
But your prediction of Frosted did come in second. That's a good job by you.
Thank you.
All right, as far
as... He was
as
a beast. He's a beast. I think he had the second or third fastest time at the Belmont Stakes, which is incredible. Secretary had the fastest of all time.
And you were there,
he won
right?
By five, yes, and he won by 5.5 lengths. It was incredible.
Did you have a great time?
Very crowded. 90,000.
Very exciting?
90,000.
I'm asking about your experience. Did you have a great time?
Yes, I always do.
Did you get the five-star treatment since you were a guest of Mike Canale's?
No.
No? No special luxury box with food and all that?
No, I wish.
Nothing?
Doesn't work like that. Back of the bus for me.
Back of the bus and lose $2 or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Back of the bus and lose $2.
In hockey.
All tied up.
Even though we don't care.
I do.
Even though I know the best team in New York sports is the New York Rangers and their season's over.
Wait, repeat that?
The best team in New York sports right now.
The best team in
New
York.
The New York Rangers.
Really?
That is factually true.
Well, the Yankees were in first place.
I think they do last year. No, we're not having this discussion right
now. Okay, that's not this.
Okay, best team in New York sports. Their season came to an abrupt, inappropriate ending.
Well, they're not playing right now, so they're
on the
golf
course. So the Stanley Cup's going on. For those of you who do care, the series is tied because Chicago refuses to take care of business in quick style.
And they're starting goalie Bishop.
Chicago looked like garbage in game one, but did enough in the last 6 minutes to win that game 2-1. And last night, Tampa got even in the series at 1-1. Johnson got his 13th goal.
Would you say six or five?
What's that?
The series.
I was kind of hoping that Chicago was going to sweep them like
that's
they should have.
That's not happening.
But that ain't happening.
That's not happening.
I really don't care how long it takes.
I say it's going seven.
Well, they should win in six. Who cares? More importantly, the greatest challenge of the Kings' life approaches as LeBron James will attempt to win an NBA title all by himself, which pretty much should remember New York Knicks fans from back in the early 80s of what it was like for Bernard King playing, being by yourself.
This is going to be a
tough
one.
Kevin Love's been done for a while.
Kyrie Irving,
man, he made a great play at the end of regulation.
20.
On a block shot, winds up cracking his kneecap, and he's done. The young superstar in Cleveland is done, and now King James is on his own to win a title by himself. He'll probably have to average 50 points a game.
I don't think it's enough.
Because if J.R. Smith keeps shooting like John Starks, it's going to be super difficult.
It's going to be tough,
for
man.
The King to get the job done.
Losing Kyrie Irving's a tough, tough loss.
It's horrible for the city of Cleveland.
Yeah. Because he had a good, 22, 23 points. He played great, good defense. It just, that's a big, huge blow. They were down anyway.
Yeah.
Golden State's fully, you know, it's just going to be tough. And in my opinion, the first game, just make it quick. I thought Cleveland outplayed them for three quarters of the game. Until overtime.
They started out on fire in the first half.
Great.
And then J.R. Smith was shooting like garbage in the second quarter. The Shumpert bailed him out with a couple of threes, but J.R. Smith cost him in the second quarter from building a lead.
Yeah.
And then Curry and company comes back, cuts it. It was tied at half. The second half was very good. At the end of regulation, between Irving's block shot and Cleveland having the ball at the end, they should have won the buzzer.
Was that a great block shot?
It was
incredible.
I was excited.
Me too.
And I don't even care about basketball.
But now, I'm not a big basketball fan. But you know what, though?
I don't even care anymore about the sport.
I want Cleveland to win.
I do, too. I feel bad for the city. Yeah. I've been to Cleveland a number of times to see the Indians play. I feel bad for the fans of that city. Great sports town. Big football town. I mean, to have nothing for 50-plus years. I mean, New York was just spoiled. Like, I can't even complain about the Rangers. I mean, how many titles we got between them, the Islanders? Yeah, back in the heyday, Yankees, the Jets won. They even won one. The Giants are real good. They got four titles.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really say.
You know what?
We got everything. We're spoiled.
It's a perfect story with LeBron going back to Cleveland.
I know.
And it's just like you want to write the script and play it out.
It's gonna be tough for him.
It's gonna be tough, man. But you know what though? He's the greatest player on the planet of the Earth, man.
Yeah,
he is. Even though he didn't get the MVP this year, he's still, in my opinion, he's the greatest player. It's going to be a tough, tough test.
It is.
The King might do it. I think they're going to win a game.
I would love to see him have a big 50-point game tonight and get a win on the road just to make it super exciting coming back to Cleveland, you know? That's pretty much the sports weekend in 5 to 7 minutes, right?
American Pharaoh.
Takes it all.
History.
Now, folks, tonight we got a special guest because I know we do a lot of hockey, especially with the playoffs going on and all that. But we're going to get to America's pastime tonight and talk baseball.
The best.
And we got one of the best baseball historians that's going to join us as soon as possible. We got Ed Randall coming on tonight.
The great Ed Randall. 40 years on the radio, right?
More than 40 years in baseball. He runs a show at WFAN on Sunday mornings, talking baseball. Does a show, same show on a Saturday on XM Radio, Sirius XM. Just a great, great baseball man. He's an author. He's done play-by-play at the minor league level. He's filled in as public address announcer. So as soon as we get him connected up for an interview, we're going to talk baseball with him. And it should be a lot of fun. But, John, in terms of starting off with baseball, you're still a tremendous Met fan.
Still got my David Wright had some bad injuries this year.
Start right there. Just think about all the injuries. And David Wright probably done for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And would you think the Mets would be in first place? I know they got the pitching in terms of starting pitching.
When we did our show in the beginning of the year, before the season started, I said Washington is running away with this division.
They should win the division.
Yeah. But when you think Washington gets a little lead, they fall back and lose three or four in a row.
Yeah.
It's like they can't. It's like who's they're all fighting for who's going to get the spot. Who's there?
Well, this St.
Louis
Strasburg, right? Strasburg's done.
Yeah.
He's injured again, right?
Yes, he's injured again. They still got, they have Sergio.
They're hoping that Harper just carries the load. He's a beast.
Yeah.
What is he, 22 years old now?
That's insane.
And he's knocking home. He's starting to take off. That was one of the things I did predict this year. that I'm happy about. I figured it was about time for him to really get going from a dominant hitting standpoint. You know, sort of like along the lines of a Miguel Cabrera.
Well, he was hurt for a while.
He was the last couple of years, but he is busting that ball around in powerful fashion.
I don't know if we're ever going to see a guy like Miguel Cabrera, like actually all around. I don't think we'll see a triple crown, another player.
Oh, I don't know if Harper can hit for average like that, but I mean, in terms of the power.
Power, yeah. But I don't think we're going to see.
He's young, so you don't know.
Cabrera is just a rare breed. Yeah, he's the greatest. He's like one of the greatest players.
Sky's the limit with that guy.
Yeah. But that's how Pujols was when he first came up. He was like that. But I think Cabrera was better.
Pujols gave you those 10 years like Joe DiMaggio style, right? Everyone used to talk about.
He's got bad foot. He has bad feet, too.
Bad feet, too. Injuries, too, yeah.
It's very painful.
But now look at all these Mets. Is Dan Murphy on the DL now, too?
Yeah. Well, did he go on the DL?
I think he's out.
All right, here we go.
Isn't he? I mean, there's so many guys hurt. It's
one of our favorite players on the Mets. Juan and mine. Juan Lagares.
Now he's heating up a little.
Yesterday, I think he popped one. Today he had a good game. I think he went...
he had at least three hits last time. He was three for three to start the game.
I think he was 3 for 5.
And he did hit a homer last night, which I liked.
Yeah.
Because he's on my fantasy team. But I don't...
That's the only reason why you like him.
I liked him beforehand. Number 12.
You did not even know who he was.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't know who he was.
We do this fantasy draft. We do a fantasy baseball draft. And I happen to whisper Juan Lagares' name and... My partner over here just all of a sudden picks him up at that moment.
All of a sudden?
And he's scratching his head. He goes, could he?
You were talking
3 for 4
about the draft.
Yes.
And I drafted Juan Lagares in the 26th round. That's
3 for 4.
That's how dumb you guys are. The
3 for 4 with a run scored.
There you go.
Doesn't matter. They won. LeGrom.
Too bad I don't get points for defense because his defense is unreal, man.
Gold glove baby last year. He's going to win another one this year.
Platinum soon. He's definitely winning another one.
He's insane.
Murphy's hurt. Dude is hitting some homers now, right? Kadiah's, got a few homers there. Granderson had 2 homers today, didn't he?
Yeah.
8 homers. Flores cracked another one. So his defense stinks, but he can hit. Right?
I like one with Flores, though. Yeah, he's got a good bat. Yeah.
So guys are picking up for all these injuries.
The hottest playing second
right
now.
You lost Wheeler before the season.
See, my
closer didn't even come back.
Getting back to Murph, everyone loves Murph. I like Murphy, too.
Really? I'm not a big Murphy guy.
A lot of guys like him, though. But you know what? I said last year, when he made the All-Star team, I was saying, here you go, Murph. Right. You should trade, because he's got contract's up at the end of the year, right? They got to make a move with him. But at that time, when he made the All-Star team, he was at his highest level he was going to be at. They should have traded him, could have got a couple of players, maybe a couple of young stud players. They should have got rid of him then.
There's always time for that.
Yeah, but now he's hurt.
The one thing I like is I like that they shifted him to third base. Because at least at third, it's more of a reactionary position. I don't think he has the range to really excel at second base. At third, I think he has a better chance. If Wright's out, he has a better chance. And the team has a better chance at overall defensive performance with him at third base. But now he's out hurt. Campbell's getting a shot. And Campbell hit a home run today.
Campbell, 2 for 4. 2 ribbies.
That's after going, 0 for 40 or something like that?
But he's playing. But he's another funny player. He gets a little hot in these hot streaks.
He's young. He's new to the team.
He was on last year. Yeah, he was on there last year. Your dad likes him.
All right.
Your dad likes Campbell.
He likes him now. All right. So, folks, I told you who the guest was going to be. He's with us now. Baseball historian, host of Talking Baseball on WFAN, Ed Randall's joining us. Ed, how are you tonight?
Fine, guys. Great to be with you.
I really appreciate you coming on, Ed. Derek Wasiak here. My partner, John Sweeney, is with us. We'll be asking you questions with baseball. But first and foremost, Ed, I want to get to how you're feeling, and I want to get to the fact that, you're a survivor of prostate cancer, and you're getting the word out there to heighten the awareness and get guys tested. Can you talk to us? Let's get this out of the way before the baseball. You run a Fans for the Cure Foundation for prostate cancer awareness. Can you talk about that a little bit right away?
Sure, Derek, and thanks for the opportunity to do that. I was diagnosed with prostate cancer after having gone for what I thought was my routine annual physical. And I, through God's grace, got, as I like to say, a second at bat at life. And right after I went into my 2 favorite words in the English language, in remission, right there with Merry Christmas and Happy Birthday.
Yeah, thank God, yeah.
I made the determination that, you know what, on the day I was diagnosed, I felt like I feel talking to you guys right now. I was fine. Prostate cancer in its earliest stages has no symptoms. It's asymptomatic. And I thought to myself, you know what? There could be tens, hundreds, thousands, millions of American men out there like me walking around feeling fine, thinking they were fine, when in fact they were time bombs. So I founded the 501c3 called Ed Randall Stands for the Cure, dedicated to the proposition of spreading the twin gospels of prostate cancer awareness, life-saving value of early detection, and we are spreading those gospels all over the place, most especially in the minor leagues. As we speak right now, we have a table with local volunteers at the Round Rock Express in Texas, and they are doing their thing right now, handing out our life-saving material. It's the centerpiece of my life, and I'm grateful to God to be able to do it.
That's a wonderful thing, Ed. Yeah, I was reading an article about there's like one in three men are going to have a problem with their prostate or possibly get prostate cancer.
Well, it's actually a little bit more than that, Derek. It's one in six Caucasian men. It's one in five Latino men.
Yeah.
And tragically, where the incidence of prostate cancer is 2 to 3 times higher than it is in the white community, it's one in four African-American men. And what's really shocking is this. A man is 33% more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer than a woman is breast cancer. The ratio among women is 1 in 8.
Wow.
So it's 1 in 8 women, it's 1 in 6 white men, 1 in 5 Latinos, and 1 in 4 African-American men. Again, a man is 33% more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer than a woman is breast cancer. We have more cases and we have more deaths. But the good news is, and since we're all baseball guys here, we love statistics, here's the last one. There's 96% to 97% cure rate if prostate cancer is detected early, and I'm one of those lucky guys.
Thank God, yeah. So you hear that, guys? Go out there and get yourself tested.
Yeah, can you give us the website for people to go to if they want to donate or contact for volunteer work?
Sure, we would love to hear from people at fansforthecure.org using the number 4, F-A-N-S, followed by the number 4, followed by the words T-H-E, C-U-R-E.org, and our doors are open. We welcome everybody's help. Many hands make for light lifting.
Might save somebody's life tonight.
Yeah, and I think you're doing a great job, and,
thank you,
and certainly continued success with your health in regards to being in remission. Now, we want to get to your expertise for the last four-plus decades, which is baseball. We know that you do Talking Baseball on WFA, and you also do the same thing with Sirius XM Radio on Saturdays?
I do a nostalgia show, actually.
Okay.
Baseball Nostalgia Show, which airs Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time, with the great Rico Petrocelli, the former Boston Red Sox infielder.
Right.
And we put upon the audience our very peculiar brand of mayhem every single Saturday from 8 to 10 a.m. And we welcome guests on the air, people who have not been on the air perhaps for quite some time, players from the past, like Denny McClain and Ray Fossey and Sam McDowell and on down the line. And we just have a lot of fun talking about baseball during Rico's time and thereafter.
And where are you at with the show now on Sundays? I know you had Mike Socha on recently, right?
Yeah, we had Mike Socha on this morning. I'm so grateful to get the visiting managers on every week, and Mike was so kind to give up his time this morning and take time out of his game day preparation to be with us, and it was wonderful to have him on today. We also had Stan Bonson on, who some of your listeners may remember was a right-handed pitcher with the Yankees in the late 60s and early 70s.
Right.
He was Rookie of the Year in 1968, and the reason we had him on was the baseball draft is tomorrow, and he was drafted in the first draft 50 years ago tomorrow by the New York Yankees at University of Nebraska. So we had him tell funny stories about how, of course, at that time there was no internet. It was not a television show, the draft, like it is now. And sometimes you waited days before you heard that you had been drafted or not. And eventually he got a phone call from the New York Yankees telling him that he was their property.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good story, yeah.
All right, Ed, now I want to ask you about your early involvement in baseball. For me, you know, you look at today with the whole thing with Twitter and Facebook and all the social media, and you look at all the different sports, besides ESPN, CBS Sports, NBC Sports, you name it. For me, growing up in the mid-70s, getting involved in watching baseball right around 75, you know, I always say the three biggest things that influenced my love of the game were, one, Sports Illustrated, helped mold me as a baseball fan. This is like in addition to my father taking my first game and getting me playing Little League and all that. I'm saying things outside of control from the family, let's say. But Sports Illustrated was big for me. Baseball cards, collecting baseball cards was huge in molding my opinions.
Right.
And This Week in Baseball, the show, because that's pretty much all I really had back then. So for yourself, your early involvement as a youngster growing up, what helped develop that passion in you?
That's an interesting question. We moved from Manhattan after having been burned out of our apartment with a very huge fire when I was 8 years old, and we lost everything. We were homeless, and eventually we wound up in the Bronx. And for some reason, my parents enrolled me in Little League, and at this time I knew nothing about baseball. I mean, they played me in right field because I like to joke about it. They played me in right field because it was against the rules to play me in Sweden.
Right.
And I had no idea what was going on while they played me in right field. And then the next year, they used to send postcards around for you to re-enroll. I didn't get a postcard.
Uh-oh.
So actually, I was really the first free agent. I didn't even know that I was the first free agent. I was playing out my option my first year, and I didn't even know it. And yet, that is the year in which it somehow kicked in. And I taught myself how to pitch, and I came back the next year in Little League, and I made the All-Star team. And it was really the only sport that I could excel in. I was always in the school pitcher in the front row.
Right.
The basket seemed like it was 8 miles high. Football? I couldn't deal or grasp the concept of knocking people down on their butts, or worse, me getting knocked down on mine. So that didn't happen. And hockey, of course, in the Bronx, what are you kidding me? So baseball was really the only outlet for me that I could excel in. And I just ate it and drank it and slept it. And I can still remember my mother saying to me, Edwin, baseball's an obsession with you. Well, it is, but through God's grace, it's become my life's work.
You know, speaking of that, this is John Sweeney, Derek's partner here. I remember when I was a kid, speaking of my mom, I had took my ball, which I don't know if even if kids do it now because they have so many different sprays, tie it up and put it under my mattress and slept under the mattress to try to get the way it was shaped. So you grew up, so moving to the Bronx, were you a Yankee fan growing up?
No, actually, I was a Mets fan growing up, and that's kind of a short, funny story. In the apartment building next to mine lived the Johnson brothers, and at this time I was about 9 years old, and Timmy Johnson was packing about 250 pounds, and he was 12, and his younger brother, Kenny, was 2 years older than me. He was 11, Kenny Johnson, and he was about 200 pounds, and their job, guys, was to beat up the neighborhood.
Yes.
And so one day, this was an act of God. I'm standing in front of my apartment building, and the new Topps baseball cards had just come out. And at that time, it was 5 cards for a nickel, the gum. And this particular year, Topps was also including in the packages these adhesive logos of teams. And one day, I'm standing in front of my apartment building, and here comes Kenny Johnson, the older and the fatter, walking a bicycle right past me. Probably not his own, probably one that he ripped off from some poor child, but nonetheless, walking the bicycle past me. And I noticed back then the bicycles had back rims, not like now. Well, on the back rim was a logo of the New York Mets. And I thought, in the interest of self-preservation, to avoid getting beaten up by the Johnson brothers, that it would be a really good thing to become a Mets fan. So even though I lived 3.5 miles, as the crow flies, from Yankee Stadium to my house, I grew up at that time a Mets fan.
That's great. I was a Mets fan. I'm wearing a David Wright shirt right now as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a fan anymore of any team. When I came out of college and I went to the minor leagues for 7 years, my first job was with the Boston Red Sox up in Elmira, New York, doing the play-by-play up there, so that was the end of the Mets. And people will say to me, well, you're a Mets fan or you're a Yankee fan. No, I'm not either, because I think that's a disservice. I believe that if you called my show and you were a Mets fan and say, for argument's sake, I was a Yankee fan, and you asked me a question, you think I'm going to color my answer because I hate you.
Right.
So therefore, it's easier for me to just sort of hover above it. And then when you hear me talking with Mike Socia, for example, I have a lot of friends and acquaintances in the game God's grace. And so, therefore, I really root for people, not for teams.
Right. So when you were a Met fan, who was your favorite player?
Tom Seaver was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I used to imitate him on the mound, the whole thing.
Right.
And it was crazy because about a dozen years ago, I wrote his book.
That's cool.
It unfortunately never got published. There were some problems at the publishing house. But
right.
I worked with Tom and wrote his book. And it was just terrific. And, oh, my God, he was it. My first favorite Met was Ron Hunt, who was the a second baseman, who was the first New York Met to start an All-Star game, which ironically was at Shea Stadium shortly after it opened in 1964. I loved Ron Hunt, but Seaver was the best.
It's just sad that he didn't get his pitch any no-hitters for us.
It's just really sad that he didn't spend his entire career here.
Yes, I agree.
That was just horrible.
Because when I think of the Mets, I do the same thing. Seaver is the man. He's the man there.
Yeah, I thought he was to the Mets the way Stan Musial was to the Cardinals.
Yeah.
That's how I would look at him, yeah.
Ed, let me ask you a question. Of all these interviews, who was the best interview that you had?
Tough
question, I know.
I'll tell you this. I did a television show for 12 years I syndicated nationally, called also, like the radio show, Ed Randa's Talking Baseball. And there's two that stand out. One is Ted Williams, which was almost an out-of-body experience.
I can imagine.
Not so much for the great baseball career, which is almost without peer, a .344 career average. It's just phenomenal. And to talk to him, but more so, the man, the great patriot that he was to this country, with his service to this country in two wars,
right.
Larger than life when he walked in. I mean, for the entire half hour, I just couldn't believe it. And he's sitting about a foot and a half away from me, and he's leaning his arm on my leg while he's talking to me. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
But probably the thing that I'm most proud of, and we did 530 half-hour shows over 14 years, that's a lot of television.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm very proud of the fact that I gave Eddie Murray his first television interview in 10 years.
Wow. Really?
He had shut off the press. He hated the press. He came to the Mets. It took me a year, really, just politely cajoling him to come on the show. The day that he did, I didn't even have to send a limousine for him to our studios that we were shooting at. And we developed a wonderful relationship after that. And at the end of the show, he said, I'd love to come back. And so I was very gratified and flattered that he felt that way. And the fact that he had not given an interview in 10 years is something that I'm very proud of.
All right. You know what? That is a great story. Hey, Ed, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to get to you, your thoughts on the local teams and some other hot topics in baseball, including Pete Rose with the All-Star game coming up. So can you stick around with us?
Sure, of course.
Thank you, folks. We will be back after these messages with more Ed Randall and baseball talk. Back after this.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WPBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back with Ed Randall, Derek Wisiak, and John Sweeney here. We're going to continue along, and since we... Since, Ed, we brought up your show and some of the interviews, I wanted to ask you about, like, some of my favorite guys growing up, if you ever got the pleasure of interviewing them. In honor of you coming on and the length of time you've spent covering baseball, my partner wore his David Wright jersey. I myself went back a little further. I didn't wear my Dave Kingman Mets jersey, but I did wear my 1979 throwback Cubs version of a Kingman jersey. And it's actually, it was June 4th of 76, so that's 39 years ago, that Kingman cracked three homers against the L.A. Dodgers out in L.A., and I remember this as a little kid watching on TV late at night, and Kingman, he's the only guy to hit three homers for the Mets in a game and against the Mets when he played for the Cubs in 79, and my dad, through the grace of God and luck be it, had taken me to that game. That was at like the end of July in 1979. So, Ed, I know a lot of people have some tough stories regarding Kingman. He's one of my favorites and my sister's all-time favorite growing up when we were kids. First game we ever went to, he had a couple of homers. Did you ever have the pleasure or displeasure of talking with Dave Kingman?
No, actually, I met Kingman once very briefly, long after he was retired.
Okay.
And I really didn't know him. All I know is that he was a great pitcher at USC.
Yeah.
But, of course, he was a tremendous hitter. And the Giants drafted him, and then he came up at a time when Mays and McCovey were still at the Giants. And he's part of a trivia question, which you as a fan probably know. When there were four divisions,
yes,
he was the only guy ever to play in all four divisions in the same season.
Yeah, I know. He was the only guy to hit a home run for a team in each of the four divisions.
He played for the Yankees.
He went from the Mets. You want to hear something funny, Ed, because nobody understands why I was a big Met and Yankee fan growing up. The first game we ever went to in 75, me and my sister was on my dad's birthday. He had two homers. They beat the Padres, whatever it was. My sister loved him because she was tall for her age and she played softball. So he was traded, you know, same day as your all-time favorite, Tom Seaver,
yeah,
right? The Midnight Massacre.
Right.
He was traded to San Diego for one of your favorite guys, Bobby Valentine. I resented the Mets for trading him to San Diego, but he had a homer for the Padres. Then he wound up getting traded to the Angels, or released and picked up by them, whatever it was. Hit a home run for the Angels. And then at the end of the season, and I was already a Yankee fan anyway, because of the whole thing with Chambliss, my all-time favorite Yankee was Thurman Munson. But the Yankees picked up Dave Kingman at the end of the season. And he actually hit, I think he hit a home run in each of his first three games with the Yankees.
Right.
And then he missed one because he pinch hit in the game. And then the next one, he hit his fourth homers. I think he had four homers in like 24 at-bats. And that was the greatness of Kingman. He hit a home run every six at-bats with the Yankees. And I remember Billy Martin said he would have put him on the postseason roster, but he didn't qualify for it because they picked him up like in mid-September.
Right.
So he helped them lock down first place. So as a little kid, I thought he was on the Yankees. You know, number 48, or whatever he wore. And I was rooting for the Yankees even more because I wanted to see. And I never saw him in the games, but I didn't pay attention to it because I was too caught up in the whole Ron Guidry, Thurman Munson, Craig Nettles thing with Reggie Jackson, right, and the Reggie Bars and all that stuff. But I had thought he was on that team. But, yeah, that was the year, 1977, that he played for a team in each division. And he finished with
exactly.
The Yankees. And then he went to the Cubs. And I'm wearing that Cub jersey in honor of you tonight. So I was hoping that you would interview. How about Thurman Munson? My all-time favorite catcher.
Great.
I was a catcher growing up. Ed, did you ever have the pleasure of sitting down and interviewing Thurman Munson?
No, he yelled at me.
Really?
The only encounter I ever had with he was yelling at me from across the clubhouse, and I had no idea that he was yelling at me. And that was the only encounter that I had with him. But I've come to love his wife, Diana, who's become a friend. The dinner that they've had, that they've raised millions of dollars for these people with disabilities.
Yeah, you do a great job for that. Yeah,
they've done phenomenal work, and I'm crazy about her. I love having her on the show. They're going to have Thurman Munson bobblehead night at the Yankees on the 18th, and I'm hoping that I'm going to have Diana on next Sunday to talk about it. I adore her. She's great.
Did you ever read the book that Marty Appel wrote about Thurman Munson, his bio?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think of the book? I thought it was outstanding, but let me see if you think the same way as me. I found it very heartbreaking that he had a poor relationship with his father. Did you find the same thing reading it?
Yeah, I did indeed. And we're the product of our upbringing, and he had a very difficult upbringing. And, in fact, Diana talks about that she came from she's Italian. I'm Italian. It's just a whole different vibe. He thought she was from another planet. He'd never seen so much love, and I think that's why they became they fell deeply in love with each other. And I never get tired of her telling the story about how, when I think she was in seventh grade, she was practicing her handwriting. She was writing Mrs. Thurman Munson in seventh grade.
Yeah, you know, from reading the book and then seeing the documentaries on Thurman and seeing how he was and the way guys like Lou Piniella and Craig Nettles and those guys spoke about him being a family guy, it's almost like when you're reading the book and you see the poor relationship he had with his father, it's almost like he went 30 times out of his way to make sure that his relationship with his kids and his wife was that strong. Did you get that same feeling also?
Yeah, he was a fantastic father and husband, and ultimately that cost him his life because he flew home on the off day from Chicago.
Now, my partner wants to ask you about Gary Carter, so John, ask him about that.
Yeah, Carter left an impression on me when he was with the Ducks out there, and I always loved Gary Carter. Without him, I don't think the Mets win that series. He was a manager of the Ducks back there. I had my three kids were in his baseball camp for two or three days. So after the camp was over, Gary Carter was working with him behind the plate and this and that. I said, Gary, can we get a picture? So he goes, yeah, sure. So I got all my kids piled up. We all took a picture. The next day, the second part of the camp, that night I ran home, did whatever to do. I got made a picture made up. And then I asked Gary to sign it, which he did. He signed balls for the kids and all that stuff. What a pure gentleman. He put, God bless your family. He's beautiful. This and that. Blah, blah, blah. Gary Carter. He left an impression. We have it hanging in our family room. He left an impression on us that, to me, he was a fantastic man. I don't know. Did you interview him?
Yeah, I got to know Gary quite well. He did my old television show a number of times. I had him on the air a number of times. We spent time at dinners together, not private dinners, but like at events, and we'd be seated at the same table. I was just crazy about the guy.
Yeah, that's how I
remember
felt.
Going up in the elevator at Shea Stadium for his introductory press conference when he'd been acquired from Montreal. And just him and me somehow. I don't know how we wound up in the elevator together alone. He was always kind and generous for this time with me. And it was just an unspeakable tragedy that he was taken from us.
Oh yeah, it's horrible.
So quickly and so horribly.
I mean, why wouldn't Mets? Because I know even I was one of them too. Was calling up, wanting him to become the manager of the Mets at the time. That he was out there working for the Ducks. That's where I met him, when the Long Island Ducks that out there. But I don't understand why he had this problem. I guess the owners didn't like him or something like that. I don't know why that they didn't hire him as their manager at the time.
I don't know. I had heard third hand that they didn't like the fact that he made himself available in the press, that they viewed that as a campaign for the job.
Right.
And they thought that that was unseemly. And unfortunately, he never got the opportunity to manage the Mets, even though every place that he did manage, including in the Mets system, he was very successful.
Yeah.
You know what, Ed? Let me say this in Gary Carter's defense. They, I remember hearing about that. That he called and said he was available, if the job became open while Willie Randolph was still managing. And some people put it out there in the media that that was offensive, that he shouldn't have done that. But let me just remind everybody that the Mets fired Willie Randolph on Father's Day.
And it was on the road, too.
On the road.
It was horrible.
And I thought that was in bad taste. I thought that was in worse taste.
Yeah.
But Carter wound up being right. Like, he I guess he knew instinctively he was going to be fired. But after they made such a big deal of him inquiring about it, to see that I was out in California, Ed, visiting a friend, and I went to see the Mets play in Anaheim against the Angels. And I remember when he got fired on that trip before he came home for Father's Day. So, I don't know. I don't know if the Mets necessarily do the best thing. Also, I understand how they felt about Carter. How did you feel about the whole thing? You think that was overblown or not?
What, the way Willie was fired?
Yeah. Well, do you think it was blown out of proportion the way Carter was handled in terms of him inquiring or making an illness available, and also the thing with Willie?
Well, I thought that I think Gary could have handled it a lot better. I don't think he should have said anything.
Right.
The Mets knew he was out there. They knew of his success. They knew that he had been in the farm system and been successful. So I don't. I think that was unnecessary.
Right.
It's almost the way in which Ron Santo had a party at his house in anticipating an entry into the Hall of Fame, and unfortunately didn't get that until after he passed away too young.
Right.
And that was really unfortunate too. So I don't. What Gary did, I think, was something that didn't need to be done, unfortunately,
right.
and hurt whatever chances he may have had.
Yep.
With regard to Willie. Willie told a Mets official, he said, "Don't let me get on that plane if you're going to fire me in California." And they said, "Oh, no, that's not a problem." He gets on the plane, and then he gets fired in California.
Yeah.
And it was just horrendous, and it is beyond me. I cannot understand why this guy is not getting another managerial shot in the major leagues.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he did a really good job.
So did I.
To be honest with you.
So do I. He's a great guy.
And he was a big time. Now, what were your thoughts on the Yankee team he played, coming from Pittsburgh to the Yankees? What were your thoughts on him in his playing days with the Yankees? Did you interview him as a player, Willie, when he was playing for those big teams in 77, 78?
No, I interviewed him later on. There used to be, it's a big production. It's a show called Yankees Magazine.
Right.
But when I worked on the Yankees Magazine television show when it first started, I was the guy who went out and got all the interviews, and Mel Allen did the voiceovers, God bless him.
Yeah.
But I did all the legwork. And so I got to know all those guys in interview, not the manner which I have in my later years. But, I interviewed Willie, and he was always so kind to me, and I'm always joking about the fact that people confuse us when we're standing next to each other. And, of course, that's impossible. But he's been great for me. Every time I've ever asked him to do something for the charity, if he's around, he comes. And I just adore him. And Gretchen and the family and the kids, they're just phenomenal people. And I remember when he came to New York, I knew just a little bit about him while he was playing AAA for Pittsburgh. And I couldn't believe the deal that Gabe Pohl made. I mean, they gave up Doc Mettich, and they got a second baseman for the ages. They got Doc Ellis, and they got Ken Brett. They got three guys out of Pittsburgh for Doc Mettich, who I never thought was a great pitcher. I thought he was decent.
Phenomenal trade.
And Randolph went on to become one of the great Yankees.
He was certainly a really clutch Yankee.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there were other stars, you know, Reggie Bars, and, you know, Nettles was a great defensive third baseman, racketing a few gold gloves, and obviously Munson and Guidry with the 25-3 one year and the 18 strikeouts. But what a great role player and a tireless worker that Willie Randolph was for that team. And you spoke about Carter. You know, we talked about the thing with Carter. I wanted to just get back to him a little bit and the Met team. And I wanted you to maybe relate that Yankee team in 77-78 to this 86 Met team. See, for me with the Mets, I thought Carter was the most important acquisition. And I never saw a catcher handle a pitching staff the way he did that team from 85 to 88. Did you view Carter as being the most important piece to that puzzle, or did you view someone else as that?
I thought he was I thought that he was the final piece after Hernandez, and then they brought Carter in. But actually the final piece turned out to be that trade with Boston when they got Ojeda.
Right.
And they got Bobby in that deal. Oh my God! I couldn't believe they got Ojeda for already with that staff with Fernandez and Ron Darling and Dwight. But Gary, you could not have picked anybody better, I think, in all of baseball to come to New York to handle that young pitching staff with that wise old head back there, counseling Dwight and Darling and all of them. He was just phenomenal. What a presence he was behind the plate. And as we all know, there is no championship in 1986 without him.
Because exactly. Yeah.
He's
right.
The one who started the rally with two outs and two strikes. And the Mets down to their final strike before Bill Buckner did them a big favor.
Right. You know, even before that, Ed, when they were down 2-0 and they went up to Boston, and he had that game where he hit the two homers. I mean,
two homers in the same game, and yeah. I wound up interviewing him. I was working that World Series, and I wound up interviewing him at 2:05 in the morning in the visitors' locker room at Fenway Park.
That's amazing. Wow. That must have been, he must have been flying on a cloud at that point after that game, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, he left an impression on me and my family, how nice of a man he was, and God, you know, he was talking about God and this and that. He was such a nice guy. To this day, I still think about him a lot.
Yeah. Ed, which team did you think was did you spend equal time with the Yankees? You know, they had the Bronx Zoo book, and then somebody else wrote a book, The Bad Guys Win One, in regards to the Mets in 86. Which team do you think was crazier in terms of the overall, the stuff that was going on? You know, the stuff with Doc and Strawberry and all those guys with the drinking with Lenny Dykstra? Or do you think the Yankees with the, you know, constant, like, on the point of boiling over at any second? Which do you think was a crazier situation?
Well, I've been around a long time, but I was not around for that. I really didn't start covering until 19 in New York.
Okay.
Because I spent 7 years in the minor leagues.
Right.
I didn't come back to New York until 1982, so I missed all the craziness with Billy and George and all the nutty things that were going on with the Bronx Zoo and Munson and Reggie and all of that stuff. So I can't talk about that because I wasn't there.
Right.
And the 86 club, I did not travel with them, so I missed that fun. They were always on their best behavior when I covered them in New York.
Because I'll tell you what, I mean, the rivalry with them and the Cardinals, I mean, 85, 86, 87, 88, going back, alternating division titles, and I really thought the Mets, the makeup of that team and the talent, I thought they should have won at least one other title. I just think there was just too much of a party atmosphere that probably prevented Davey Johnson from getting things accomplished. Do you agree with that, or you think it was something else?
No, I think the Mets were, at the end of the day, were gross underachievers, and they should have won multiple World Series, and they didn't. 85 was probably not their time yet. They came of age in 84, and it was a whole new atmosphere when they brought Davey up in 84. 85, it was just not their time, and the Cardinals beat them. 86, they were phenomenal. They should have won in 87.
Right.
Of course, they didn't have Gooden until June 1st because of the drug suspension, and he went to Smithers. And in 88... they lost to a team in the NLCS that I think is perhaps the weakest world championship club I've ever seen, the 1988 Dodgers. I don't know how they did it, but they had Oral Hershiser, and they rode that arm to a world championship and beat a vastly, vastly superior Oakland A's club. I think that when you look at that period of time in baseball history, the Mets were underachievers and should have won multiple World Series, followed by the great Oakland A teams, and they should have won multiple World Series, and they lost to a vastly inferior Dodger team in 88. They won the Earthquake Series in 89, and they lost to an inferior Cincinnati club in 1990.
Yeah, you could say that they absolutely blew it against the Reds.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe if it wasn't for a limping Kirk Gibson, maybe they would have won in 88, but they shouldn't have lost anyway despite that one game, you know?
I don't think they ever recovered. My theory, and I've talked to a lot of guys who were in uniform that night for both those clubs. I just don't think the A's ever recovered psychologically from Kirk Gibson hitting that home run.
Yeah, I think your point going from the Mets to Oakland, that's one of the best points I've heard in a long time in baseball. Yeah. I agree with it right off the bat. I think that's a great point you bring out with those two teams. I really do. And I don't know if they had the craziness going on in Oakland. They might have in terms of the stuff the Mets were doing off the field. But that team, I mean, Terry Steinbeck, Walt Weiss, along with the Henderson brothers, Dave and Ricky Henderson. I mean, you know, the Bash brothers and Dave Stewart and Bob Welch. I mean, That team was great. They're
unbelievable. I mean, they had one of the great. They had the greatest reliever in history.
Yeah.
For those few years before Mariano came along,
right.
Eckersley was unbelievable. And then in that season, which they lost in 1990, they brought Dave Parker in. They brought Willie McGee in. They brought Harold Baines in. I mean, it's like they didn't know what to do with these guys. They were so deep.
Right.
But they lost four straight.
That's right. That's right. They had Parker in there. I forgot about that. That's right, yeah.
That team was so dominant.
It was a monster team.
All right, so at least we can find comfort that the Mets weren't the only team to blow it.
Ed, speaking of the Mets, this going to the present time right now, that they're as of right now, they're in first place.
First place,
are you shocked that this team, because I thought Washington was going to run away with this division, but it seems like Washington wins a few games and then they lose three or four in a row. It just like nobody, I mean, the Mets in the beginning of the year were running up, but it just seems like nobody wants this division. Are you shocked that they're in first right now?
Yeah, I am. I think Terry has done an amazing job keeping them together. Phenomenal. I'm surprised by the production of Lucas Duda, especially since we were sold on the idea that he couldn't hit left-handed pitching.
Right.
Doesn't look like that to me. And with all of the injuries that they've had, Collins has been phenomenal. And they come to play every night, and that's where I give him the most credit. But I still think Washington's going to blow away the division.
But with all the injuries the Mets have gone through, I mean, and you know, the closer, it's like a first-time closer. Familia's doing a great job, right? I mean,
Familia, yeah, he's doing great.
He's doing an incredible job filling in. They're missing two closers. One guy didn't even make it in there, right? And he is out hurt.
Mejia, yeah.
I mean, how do you explain that, Ed, right?
They got suspended or something. Yeah,
they've got great arms out there. Familia has been their most valuable player without a doubt.
I agree with you.
He's an all-star guy right now, and Mejia, I don't think will ever regain his closer's role. I think he lost it with this drug suspension.
Yep.
They got Parnell coming back at some point. He's going to fortify the bullpen. Vic Black perhaps as well, but we don't know how they're going to perform coming off serious surgery. And I'm just amazed at how the Mets are somehow keeping it together with half of the Las Vegas team up, it seems.
Right. Listen, not a noteworthy bullpen in terms of names, but even more impressive maybe, and he's been around a while, but how about Pudgy Bartolo Colon? I mean, he has been unbelievable for this team, right?
He pitched great yesterday, yeah. Pitch a good game.
Yeah, well, I can't mention on the air what we call him in the house informally, but the FCC won't allow that. But he is just amazing. He is incredible. He maximizes the talent that he's got. He knows, my God, he knows how to pitch. He can still hit a mosquito in the butt. His control is phenomenal, and he's a wonderful teammate. He's great. I thought when they gave him the 2-year deal, I thought it was ridiculous, but I'm wrong.
You know what? I'm wrong, too, because I agree with you 100%. When they gave him that 2-year deal, I was like, what are the Mets doing right now? But it turned out fantastic. He's been pitching fantastic.
Yeah,
he's been well worth it.
You know what, Ed? I followed him a little more because I follow the Indians a little more than the Mets and Yankees nowadays, and he has always been an innings eater. He just, I mean, he's not as dominant as he was when he was young, but he just goes out there. He can give you 7-8 innings anytime you want. I mean, that's just the way he's always been.
Are the Mets going to bring up the kid, the Long Island kid, Mats?
Mats?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they will. I've talked to a couple scouts who've seen him out west, and he's pitching in a higher league right now. And that has always been, because I was in that league, it's always, even though the cities have changed since I was in there,
right.
It's always been a hitting-dominated league. And yet he has been tremendous. And I think he'll at some point he'll be up. But that is a really pleasant problem for them.
I can't wait to see him, Ed, because he's from my backyard. I live out in Stony Brook. He went to Ward Millville High School.
Yeah.
So he did really well. Local boy. I saw him a couple times at the high school pitch. And I can't wait for him to make it with the Mets. He's a tremendous worker.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise because nobody thought when they got him that he was a first-round draft choice.
Right.
They thought that the Mets signed him because the Mets thought that they could sign him at reduced dollars. And so it was all a signability issue and nothing. But nobody thought he should have been drafted where he was drafted inside the industry. But he has gotten – that's the thing about the baseball draft. You just never know. you just never know about some of these kids, and he has already exceeded expectations.
That is true, though. You're right. I remember that Michael Taylor, I think he's playing for when he first came up, he was like a highly drafted. I think he went one or two in the draft. He's been with Oakland, and he's bouncing around. You don't know with these guys. You know, these young kids, you don't know until they mature a little more.
I hope he makes it. Now, Ed, I know you've seen some better center fielders live than me, like a Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays. Those guys play. But I thought Andrew Jones was absolutely amazing in his defensive play in center field all those years with Atlanta. What are your thoughts on Juan Lagares? Because I think he's my favorite Met, like, right away last year, before he got his gold glove. That kid, he can play shallow and patrol the ground like no other. What are your thoughts watching him, gallop around out there?
I think he's phenomenal. He may be the best center fielder in the National League, but let's give credit to McCutchen in Pittsburgh, who's a phenomenal ball player.
Yes.
But Lagares is just terrific, and is another guy that nurtured through the system. And has they've been very patient with him, and but if it's in the air, if he can't catch it, it can't be caught.
Right. And what are your thoughts with this team before we hit the next break? What are your thoughts with this team going forward? The rest of you think the Mets have enough? I mean, a lot of injuries with David Wright and a number of guys and the suspension, like you said, with Familia.
Murphy.
You think they have enough to hang around and fight for a wild card berth?
Yeah, I think they have enough to hang around almost by default. There's a lot of problems going on right now in Miami,
right?
With bringing the general manager down into the dugout. There's a lot of there's a lot of problems there. They've not caught fire at all since they made the managerial change when they were 16-22, and Philadelphia needs to dismantle. And it's just a matter of time till Hamels will be out the door once they get the right deal. And they can hang on to him. They can wait. The price will go up, and they'll probably get what they want the longer they hang on to him. They'd like to move Ryan Howard. They'd like to move Chase Utley. And they're not going to be a factor. Atlanta's playing a lot better than people thought. They made when they made that big deal with San Diego, and they sent Kimbrel out, which I was shocked about.
Yep.
But they've gotten phenomenal prospects in that and other deals. And when they move into the new stadium in 2017, they're going to be a factor. But right now, they're not going to contend. Phillies aren't going to contend. I thought the Mets were going to be a third-place team behind Miami, but I think the Mets are going to hang around, and Washington's doing them a favor by keeping them in the race.
Right, so now I know it's tough because it's only the beginning of June, but if we really look at it, you know, I mean, St. Louis is St. Louis. And San Fran and L.A. are in a good battle, early season battle for first place. But when you think of one of those two teams between L.A. and San Fran, and then you got to factor in Pittsburgh and maybe Chicago, do you think the Mets' best chance is to possibly have Washington fail and fight for first place? Or do you still think they have a better chance with the wild card, the way the given playoff system is?
I think, the general manager of the Mets has sold the fan base for 2 years on the fact that it was his belief that 2015 was going to be the year they were going to seriously contend to play in October. And regardless of how the Mets get there, whether it's the second wild card, the play-in game, whatever it is, I think that's what they're aiming for. I just think they want to be able to get the fan base to buy tickets for a game in October, and then anything after that is going to be gravy. You're playing at a time in which, when you look around the league, as you just said, St. Louis is in a class of their own, and then the rest of them throw them in a bag. How the Mets, if they were to get into October, could react with such young pitching, inexperienced pitching, who knows? But the Kansas City Royals did it last year, and you don't know. This Mets staff has got great talent, and I think that they're just trying somehow to claw their way into October, even if it's the second wild card.
All right, hey, we have to keep you for at least one more segment. Can you stay with us?
Sure.
All right, but before that, folks, we're going to be back. We're going to keep Ed Randall. We're going to get into the Yankees a little bit, and then some legendary ball players. We got a top 10 list of the last 40 years we want to run past him, and a little Pete Rose talk because of the All-Star game, and everyone's always talking about him for the Hall of Fame. So, folks, stay with us. Ed Randall is kind enough to spend at least another half hour, hopefully, with us. Ed, we appreciate it. We'll be back right after this, folks.
the views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.